welcome to Wings Over Water, Creativity and Recovery on City of Angels Recovery Radio. This is your hostess with the mostest, Kathy Moser. I am live on location in Prescott, Arizona with Rico here at the Rehab Lounge. It's a new place called the Rehab Lounge in Prescott. It's a place to feel safe. Can you tell us about your idea about why you started the Rehab Lounge?
I guess when I got here, I guess I was so used to being around people. You know, being in the DJ scene in Dallas, Texas, I was addicted to the nightlife. I was addicted to all the fun, all the people that I got to meet. And then I did travel a lot. And when I got here, it was just boring. It was like, just because I want to get sober and I want to stay sober, I still wanted to have fun. You know what I mean? I did not want to have that awkwardness that I guess I felt, which I really never felt before until when I got sober. You know what I mean? I felt like, and I'm an outgoing person. I could talk to anybody. But when I got down here, it was just like I've never met so many, I guess, people trying to do the same thing that I'm trying to do, which was get sober and try to learn how to live on life's term. And I thought about this. I was like, man, this got to be something. I can't take this. This is boring. You know what I mean? And I'm a type of person, I have to know everybody. And I'm addicted to people knowing who I am. So I was just brainstorming, and I was like, man, we need to open a pool hall, a coffee shop, you know, and just have music and just be free. And that was the main thing that was my goal, is to come to a place and not have to worry about, you know, what are you wearing? What kind of car are you driving? What drugs do you have? You know what I mean? Now I'm here, and people come in, and it's just like me DJing in Dallas and being around all the people, but we're all sober. And that is the most best feeling that I needed. I needed this right here because of the fact that me being 41, I'll be 42 February 2nd, and I guess as you get older, you don't really have that many friends. You know what I'm saying? When you get older, it just seems like I don't want to live like that. I still want to be able to be a part of the community, have my friends and have fun. And I think that's the best thing.
Right, so I think that's an interesting part about an interesting aspect that you mentioned. And also, I just want to say, hey, thank you for being on the show and welcome. Mm-hmm. Forgive my manners. I poorly socialized. I did a lot of drugs, and I'm still working on getting along with people.
Yeah.
So I think it's important, right, that we find like these heart friends in recovery.
Yes.
It's like one of the things that we have a passionate about friendship in youth. Mm-hmm. And that in our culture, we tend to outgrow it.
Yeah.
Right? But in recovery, like we find like we really need people.
Yes, most definitely.
And I will not break into people who need people are the luckiest people in the world. Yeah. I won't sing that for you right now.
I totally agree.
Can you tell me a little bit? You mentioned that you were like came out here to Carlton, this recovery center, mm-hmm. and tell me about the process of how this whole facility, like this is a really cool, and I hope you guys get the chance to come out here to Prescott and see this, or if you have the inspiration from this show to maybe start your own sober cafe mm-hmm. in your town. You said like a lot of people came and helped you put this together. Can you
yes.
tell us a little bit about that process?
Well, like I said, I came from California. I was in A Better Tomorrow, and previous to all this, I was talking to my mom, and we were talking about moving to Arizona. One of my bucket lists was to go white water rafting. So I went to Clean Adventures. I ended up doing that. I mean, before I even thought about going to treatment, before this even played out, me and my mom were talking about it. And sure enough, I ended up right where God wanted me to be. I mean, I had asked God, I wanted to be alive. I wanted to still have my dreams, but still be around people and then help people. So we came about this. Like I said, I went to Clean Adventures for 5 months. Then I was having a rough time. Then I decided to go to another place, which was Carlton. And that's where I met my family. I could not believe how it was just 30 days of just being with guys. And even though I had I had a lot more time than them, but I still started off. I had 5 months, and these people were new. Like, they were, like, just coming off the streets. And, man, I felt so wanted. I got to cook for them. I got to, you know, be like a father figure and, you know, help out. And once I saw that where this was leading me, because a lot of these people were still sick, they weren't eating, so I pretty much got everybody into a way of eating and learning how to cook, waking up early in the morning, because I'm a morning person, you know, and just helping people out. So then I did my 90 days there. And we had, me and Chad, the other business partners I'm with, we had been cooking up a storm. I got depressed when I cooked like 10 pies in 1 week. And I was like, you know, if I'm depressed, I'm like, I can't eat like this. So all these kids, you know, they're going to eat. I'm going to feed them. I'm just going to feed them, get them fat. So we were making pies and cookies. I was cooking Puerto Rican food. And then, like I said, we went through that. It was kind of rough a little bit, graduated. And then, like I said, I went home, got my card, came back. And then we sat down, me, Brad, and Chad sat down, and we started talking about the business. And we did it. And then next thing I know, everybody that I graduated with, which was, I think, eight of us, everybody pitched in. Everybody came here. They did the wiring. They did the painting. They helped us move, you know, and it was, and that was really something that's never been done. I mean, actually, people that are just getting out of treatment actually keep their word, you know what I'm saying, and want to give back to the community and stay here and end up staying here. I plan on dying here. I love it so much in Prescott. I love the fact that there's so many people. I love the fact that it's just beautiful when you wake up.
I really like the fact that you talked about that you want to have a joyful life, and that that's really important to you, and that you want to give back. In terms of like music and cultural events, what kind of events are you hosting here at the Rehab Lounge?
Right now, we're looking for local talent. We're looking for anybody that can sing, do poetry, open mic.
And are you guys holding meetings here and other kinds of events?
Oh, yes, we are. We do meetings every Saturday from 6:30 to 7:30. We do an NA meeting. And then we're actually starting, I think, Wednesday, we're doing a CA meeting. Mm-hmm. And then...
got a whole group of guys meeting here right now.
Yeah, they're from Carlton.
Okay.
So we have a lot of the treatment centers that come here, and they whole group here, a lot of the counselors.
Oh, that's such a cool idea.
Yeah. So we're trying to actually give back to all the communities, and we want them to know that they can come here and host their meetings or their groups and feel safe and, you know, and meet and interact with other people. So that's the main thing. And the number one thing that I do here is when there's a group of people, I try to make sure I introduced everybody, because I know a lot of people, so I try to make everybody, you know what I mean, know each other. So when they get out, they have that structure of knowing people, and then they won't feel so alone, or they won't feel like, oh, well, I don't want to go to rehab because I don't know anybody. Well, once I break the ice, you know, because I'm a people person, I tend to kind of like grab people and say, hey, this is Brian from such and such. He goes to this treatment center. So I try to make everybody interact. And then, like I said, we have ping pong, and then we have the Wii and stuff like that. So a lot of people actually feel more comfortable coming here, and it's no stress. So that's one of the big things that we try to focus on, is to make people, when they walk through that door, to feel comfortable.
It's funny. It's kind of like I'm thinking about you DJing the DJing that you did in the past, and you said that like there was a lot of like drugs and alcohol involved in that. But DJing is bringing people together.
Yes, it is.
Right. So in some ways, you're DJing, but like your turntable is your cafe.
Oh yeah, yes, most definitely. I would like I said, I'm gonna get back into it hopefully soon. I had a lot of opportunities. I've really met a lot of big DJs actually during my time, but. You know, the drugs got to me, and it was just, it took a toll on me. Even though before I came in, before I decided to come to treatment, I was still DJing, I was still partying, I was working at Samson as a chef, I had an excellent job, nice car, I was doing a deal, you know what I mean? But it was still something I was missing. If I would have had to use drugs to manipulate people or to hang out, if I had to, you know, if I couldn't just be myself, this was the first year out of my whole life that I'm actually don't have to use drugs. You know what I mean? And it feels wonderful. Like, I know that everybody comes here, they want to hang out here, and they want to socialize. And that's kind of like my sober high, is interacting with people and just listening and trying to help the next person do the right thing. Because believe it or not, there's a lot of people that went out, but you know what? That's part of life. You know what I mean? And what I tell them is, no matter what you do, you make sure you always keep in touch with your friends, your sponsor, and you come back. Everybody is going to experience their highs and lows. It's what you do. It's how you pick yourself up and come right back. That's right. The main thing that people don't understand. And I try to tell a lot of the younger guys, because I'm 40, you know, 41, and I've been through a lot. And the way I live is totally different from there because I'm a lot younger. I was always a stand-up person. I always carried myself, dressed nice. I've always tried to be an honest person, even when I was out there drawing it up and partying. Because no matter what, I was still I still had a following. I still had to do the clubs. I've had to dress a certain way. I've had to, you know. So I've always had a high standards for myself, especially doing music and the way I carry myself. Because, I mean, I've been DJing for Dallas for 10 years. And to be a part of that scene is very pretentious, rich people. And it's just like I had to always be on my P's and Q's, you know, with them. Because one bad, you know, thing can ruin you, especially in the music industry. You know what I mean? So, you know, once we do this down here, because hopefully our next project is to open up a pool hall with a studio. That's our next thing.
Really?
I want to bring my DJ equipment down here. And I'm an old school DJ. I'm more vinyl. Mm-hmm. I have tons of vinyl. Mm-hmm. And I'm more up a showboat, you know, scratching and stuff like that, making beats and singing. So that's my next thing, is to get this going and then branch off and then do a pool hall slash, you know, studio.
Well, that'd be a great way to bring young people in, yeah, too. You
and
know?
Then on top of that, I mean, there's so many people that are so musically inclined down here. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And you know what I mean? And if you could tap that, and, you know, if you can get into that music and then have them make music without using drugs, then they will get accustomed to it. And then they'll say, you know what? If it does happen, if I do make it big, then I'll know how to handle it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because that's a big part of, because music, you know, music is drugs and the girls and the drinking, and it's a lot of hectic stuff. You know
right,
what I mean?
It can be.
Yeah, it can be. So, I mean, and actually when I was in California, I had met a couple big-time DJs that said they've been sober for like 5 years. That it took them a while, but they always took somebody with them. So, you know, when they did a show, they always had their A-team with them.
Right.
And that's the way you have to do it, you know what I mean? And the first thing you have to tell somebody is, no, I don't drink, I don't do drugs, just bring me water. Because when I was DJing, that was just unlimited, you know, alcohol, here's drugs, free here, you know? So it was kind of crazy. You know, of course, I never said, no, here, I'll take it, you know. But now, if I do get back into music business, I'm going to be more cautious about everything.
So I have one more question for you, and I thank you for taking the time out of your busy day here to do this. My question is, so you have this whole process. You went from having a vision to actually we're now sitting inside your vision.
Yes.
And one of my questions is, how did you take care of yourself through that process? I would guess that it was sometimes frightening and nerve-wracking, or did you just always have confidence? Or
I always had confidence, you know what I mean? I guess because, you know, I guess where I was raised and my parents being Muslim, and I grew up in a real hard religious background, and the way I guess my upbringing was real, I always had to be, you know, me being Puerto Rican and dark skinned, I always grew up, you know, with rich white kids and stuff like that. So I always kept myself high standards, you know what I mean? I've always had to always be that person. You know what I mean? To be that person in music, or always had to have the best car or the bikes or the, you know what I mean? My parents used to, I have spoiled. Spoiled, that's what it was. Being spoiled. That's what
don't
it was.
You,
I was like, being spoiled, I'm not gonna lie. Being spoiled probably was one of the things that my parents, you know what I mean? Because they traveled, they stayed in Saudi Arabia and Jeddah, and they traveled to the Middle East. My stepdad speaks 5 different languages. And my parents weren't around, but they always had the money, always would give me gifts. So they didn't want to deal with me, so they would send me off. So I was real materialistic for a while. This was, like I said, this was the first year, right here, this year. It's the first year that I haven't asked my parents for nothing. You know what I mean? It feels wonderful. I don't even want to go back home. I mean, Austin is beautiful. I love Austin. It's a musical capital. But I love it down here so much. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's really nice. And this is the first time that I actually feel free. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can see it in your eyes.
Yeah, you know? Uh-huh. My mom's like, oh, you don't want to come home? You miss me? Because I'm a baby. I'm not going to lie, I'm a big baby when it comes to my mom. But, you know what? This is the first time that I'm doing Rico, and it's nice.
Awesome.
And then she can sleep. She knows I'm not out there drugging it up or getting arrested or, you know what I mean? So this is perfect for both of us. You know, I'm doing me, and I'm sober. And my mom can actually, you know, she's fixing to travel to Germany and stuff like that. So she's free, too, I guess. Now she can live her life.
Awesome.
You know what I mean? Because I'm the baby of the family.
Well, congratulations, Rico, on your success of Rehab Lounge. And we really thank you for taking the time to be with us on the radio show today.
Thank you.
Now we're here on part 2 of our live from Prescott, Arizona episode of Wings Over Water, Creativity and Recovery. I am here with William Dicker. He is a primary therapist at Carlton Recovery Centers out here in Prescott. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's very exciting.
So I know that you use music in some of the work that you do at Carlton, and I wondered if you could talk about what you thought was useful and why that was valuable for people in treatment.
For the first reason I use it is because for most folks, it's their first experience delving into a spiritual side of what we all have in our lives, music. And when I start, I usually use the drum because it's the most primal. And you can be anywhere from an atheist to a very sincere Christian and still do drumming because the communication is different. For me, there's a core that comes out with music, a core feeling that corresponds to the third step, at least for me, of giving everything up and just letting go. And there's a way that people do that with music that they don't do with other things. It facilitates, because it's awkward, because it's different, and everybody has to do it, they just do it. And it's different. And so, like other forms of art, it opens up what meaning is in their life. And I think for most of us that are musicians and most of us that are performers, what happens is we often, in the context of performance, we lose that we do music for the meaning in our lives, and we become performers, unless we make a conscious choice to be a performer out there every day. If you bring that, we know that most of our clients aren't going to be performers, but they can tap in to the meaning, even if they can't identify it. And for me, music and to some extent art and dance can do that. Now, most people are afraid to do it with dance because, you know, all the body image stuff. But dance is also a very effective way to express yourself. There's Nia is a dance spirituality group that is very focused on being free, getting used to your body, which most of us that have addictions don't ever get to while we're active in our addictions. You know, we become comfortable in our bodies only after we're awkward. So there's so many realms, there's so many ways that music and art really do ground us in a way that there's really nothing else that grounds us like that.
What have you found? Like, I think the awkwardness is a really important point that you're mentioning, and I wondered, what have you found that would help, how do you help people pass through that awkward stage or even enter into something when they know it's going to be uncomfortable and awkward?
You know, I think you as a performer last night do that, and I know the people on the radio don't know that, but when I'm enthusiastic, and it's, for the most part, most guys will go with my enthusiasm. And if I'm inviting but not judging, if I'm inviting, not judging, and not punitive, then it gives them the best opportunity to engage. And I've rarely had people not engage. I mean, you know, there are some people who are too stimulated to do drumming or to do music, but for the most part, people really, they're amazed by the big drum and they want to play the djembes and they want to play the different rattles and different other percussion. And once they see the first group do the heartbeat on the big drum, it's really over. They're engaged.
I know that in recovery, one of the activities one of the things that's so important is us feeling connected to other people, which is something that most of us in our active addiction felt isolated and alone. And so I'm wondering what your thoughts are, what you've observed in your groups as people are making music together, and what effect does that have on the community?
One of the things is that for that hour or hour and a half, whatever's happening at the house, whatever's happening, it goes away. So that two people who maybe aren't very happy with each other, they sit around the drum, and the drum dictates what happens. I mean, essentially they do, but when they're giving up and playing the drum or playing together, the activity is largely about listening to each other and trying to add in. So it implies cooperation at its very core. And again, just like drum circles, the people who want to show off are usually the people first humbled.
Mm.
And what happens then is they understand that this is a cooperative effort and that the best result, the best sound, the best feelings are when it's not about me. It's when I'm trying to fit into the groove, when I'm trying to add a little something to the groove, it then becomes just a cooperative effort. And that's, in a regular drum circle, that's what happens and that's what's great. But even with new drummers, they are willing to get simple to make it work. You know, some guys are only going to play on the beat, you know, because that's ultimately what they feel comfortable doing. But when it is the beat, they're holding the bottom. They're actually holding the piece together. And the guys who maybe have more skills are adding in. But if they get too loud, then the bass gets thrown off. And the idea is to sustain the groove as long as you can.
It's funny. It's sort of like in some ways similar to 12-step recovery. In that, like, the foundation of it is just, like, I really like what you're saying about the people who are playing the very simple part are really the lattice, if you will, or the structure upon which everything else is resting.
Right, exactly.
And almost anybody, the other cool thing is that really anybody can do that. Almost anybody
right.
can stay on that one beat.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's amazing is because guys who think that they can't do anything or they can't, you know, they feel like they can't even keep a beat, they can, particularly when they're doing it as a group. You know, they get the sense. And when you're working with a big drum, the drumsticks just fly off the drum. And it's rarely after a minute is anybody out of time. Because the drum is doing the work. Everybody's putting but the drum responds by throwing the stick up. And that's something that guys don't expect either. Even the drummers don't expect it, because when they're playing a real drum, when they're playing a trap set or a hand drum, the drums don't respond that way. But when you're playing a big sort of Native American drum or a big bass drum with a lot of people around it, you're not working. You're just listening, and the drum stick is going where it's supposed to go, and the drum is responding by pushing it up. So there's a sense of spirit anyway.
Right, that's so interesting. It's like the third thing in the room.
Mm-hmm.
It like arises, like almost like the drum's the higher power. And it's something that we call into being by mm-hmm. focusing together.
Right, exactly. And you don't. And the thing that I love is, you know, there are no politics, there are no opinions. It's just what it is.
Hmm.
And guys learn from, and if a beat goes bad, the other thing too is that
beat's
guys
gone bad.
Yes, beat's gone bad. Yeah. It's probably Eminem's new project. but when they don't work out so well, again, there's no judgment in there, and they figure out it go well. So I say, well, okay. So who wasn't listening? Who wasn't contributing? How do we change that? And people are willing. Because it's a group project and it's different, people are willing to hang in there and do it again.
It's so interesting. You know, I don't think this topic has come up on this show yet about the similarity between creativity and recovery, which is what I'm always like looking to experiment mm-hmm. on, is that the role that listening plays. Because anyone who's a musician knows that the best musicians to play with are the ones not that just can play well, but that can listen well.
Right.
And in a lot of ways, recovery is predicated upon the community listening.
Right.
In fact, in some ways, that's what we really, if you go to 12-step meetings, really the main function that's happening is that people are being heard and listening.
Right.
If you happen to participate in 12-step meetings, that's the one way to recover. There's several different ways to recover. We have no opinion on that on this show. But at some point, sharing in that format becomes an act not just of getting well, but of service. And in the same way that art can be like that, where art becomes not an act of ego,
mm-hmm.
but an act of my expressing whatever this is, this art that I have inside of me, being really helpful to other people. And I just like to tell my listeners, just because you're interested in creativity, I was in Tempe, Arizona yesterday, and I'll put some pictures up on this on Facebook. All along, there's a lake in Tempe, and all along the lake, there's a running path and a walking path, and there are plaques maybe every 20 feet, and what it is poems. And the way you read the poems is by walking the path. So there'll be like four lines of the poem on each plaque, and then you walk along, and I was like so moved and thinking, you know, in 100,000 years when people come and find this area of the country, if an archaeologist uncovers Tempe, Arizona, you know, one thing they may find is these brass plaques of this poem, and I wonder if they'll understand why they were, each piece was 20 feet apart and that it was a walking path. Mm-hmm. But it was such a beautiful way in which art was contributing to the community. I was really moved by that. So since I'm on the road and I want to take you with me on the road here. So William, is there anything else? I know, thank you so much for taking the time out of your work day. I totally appreciate that, to add to this radio show. Is there anything else, any other thoughts you have about recovery and creativity that we didn't bring up that you think are important?
Only a million. But I think the thing that I found most for my creativity is really tying it, whether I'm doing an old blues song, whether I'm doing any of the kinds of music that I do, is where does it hit me and how does it draw me into my spirituality? And I do murder ballads, so it doesn't have to be hugely.
You do like exclusively murder ballads?
No. I do a couple of murder ballads when we do. I mean, you know, but how does the song hit you, and how do you want to see yourself doing this? And I always found that when I do it, when it's from the meaning in my life or the heart in my life or the love in my life, that other people get it. When I try to just rip something off, whether it's a song that I write or a song that somebody else does, and I just do it, people aren't engaged. Mm-hmm. The engagement comes from where I come from, and it doesn't, nothing else matters. So you've got to tie it to your meanings and your belief system, and then other people will accept it.
Hear the trucks on the highway and the ticking of the clocks. There's a ghost of a moon in the afternoon. Bullet holes in the mailbox. Bullet holes in the mailbox. Keyholes in my mind. Too long in the wasteland. Too long in the wasteland and falling behind. I said, won't you come see me? When the sun goes down, it'll be just like the old days when I used to let you hang around. Well, I don't know, I might not speak the language anymore. Too long in the wasteland, too long in the wasteland, we'll close some doors. People in the village watch the children play. At the sight of a stranger, they call the kids away. Just leave that man alone, I hear the mother say. Too long in the wasteland, too long in the wasteland's what made him that way. I hadn't intended to bend the rules, but whiskey don't make life. It just makes fools. So I didn't mean to say it, but I meant what I said. Too long in the wasteland. Too long.